It is the diagnostic tool that's used across the professions, and I say across the professions, for psychiatry, social work, counseling, many of the other public health professions. It is a reference book that has been in place for over 40 years, and we are now in the fifth edition of this resource tool. It is commonly referred to as the Bible of mental health diagnosing and assessing. I don't know if I would refer to it as a Bible, but it certainly is a very useful resource guide for all the professionals to be able to reference. What is different about this new DSM is that it's been 14 years in the making, so it's the first time in over a decade that professionals have had a chance to talk about mental disorders, look at the criteria for assessing and diagnosing mental disorders, look at some of the changing science that has influenced how we assess and develop criteria for mental disorders. There have been a number of changes in the new DSM that I believe professionals have been probably reading about for the last 2 or 3 years. And some of these changes I think professionals are going to probably appreciate, because there's been a lot more deliberation about having people with mental health conditions also weigh in on some of the criteria. There's been advocacy groups that have been providing feedback to the APA regarding criteria.
You mentioned the APA there, the American Psychiatric Association. Could you just explain how widely used the DSM is around the country, or you know, how much it's used in the U.S.?
The DSM is widely used in the United States, and in fact is the standard for assessing mental health disorders. It's used by insurers. It's used to record diagnoses in electronic medical records and hard records. It is the source that is standard best practice across the country in the U.S., but it's also used internationally as well. It's used to distinguish mental disorders from medical conditions, although there is certainly the approach to integrate these two circumstances in the assessment process.
I just wanted to touch on something that the director of the National Institute of Mental Health, Dr. Thomas Insel, wrote back in April. He wrote, quote, "The goal of this new manual, as with all previous editions, is to provide a common language for describing psychopathology. While DSM has been described as a Bible for the field, it is, at best, a dictionary, creating a set of labels and defining each. The strength of the DSM has been reliability. It's ensured that clinicians use the same terms in the same ways. Its weakness," Insel writes, "is its lack of validity. Patients with mental disorders deserve better." And that post grabs some headlines that seem to imply that the National Institute of Mental Health was going to be dropping the DSM. Could you explain what happened there?
I'm familiar with that post and the surrounding discussion that that post generated. And I think what Dr. Insel was referring to, and what people in the field are, practicing field are interpreting that to be, is that what indeed is being considered is that much of the funded research has been very diagnostic specific, that there's been funding through NIMH and NIH for research on schizophrenia, or research very specific on major depression. And with the new DSM, and I think our new practice guidelines and practice behaviors and our just new philosophies is saying, is that we can't just limit it to single diagnostic categories, that people live in very big worlds involved with multiple diagnoses and multiple conditions, and that's what we need to be researching, is the integration of all those factors, not just diagnosis that's a culmination of symptoms. So I think Dr. Insel is quite a visionary in putting this topic right on the table and saying this is something that we want to begin to blend our research and expand our research and consider some of the other variables, psychosocial variables that are important to people and meaningful to people. So I think this was a very important criticism to lift, and I look forward to seeing where funded research is supported in the future towards this model.
I should also briefly mention that in May, Insel came out with a joint statement along with the president of the American Psychiatric Association, which I think kind of sought to allay some of the concerns, wanting to say that patients, families, and insurers can be confident, and I'm quoting there from the statement, that effective treatments are available and the DSM is the key resource for delivering the best available care that the NIMH has not changed its position on the DSM-5 itself, but that looking ahead, in how, as you said, it's going to approach the funding of research, it's going to have, as you say, a new philosophy. That almost sounds exciting. Where are things headed?
It does sound exciting, and it is headed in some good directions. I think with the advancement of this DSM, there's been more consideration for psychosocial and environmental concerns that were, while they were previously available in the previous DSM, they were not front and center. Now with the new structuring of the DSM and diagnosing and assessing aspects of it, psychosocial and environmental concerns can be right up front with a major clinical diagnosis.
And when you say psychosocial, what do you mean exactly by that? Or what's a good example of that, perhaps?
Looking at social circumstances, environmental issues, homelessness, poverty, lack of access to health care, these are issues that are really bothering people. And while their symptoms may be of concern and lend themselves to more diagnostic criteria, it's these psychosocial issues that where people live and breathe every day, and that clinicians perhaps maybe have been underestimating the importance of those in creating a clinical picture and then arranging interventions for that. The new DSM adds many more components of other, listed as other conditions, and that the psychosocial and environmental concerns are available to clinicians. And that's certainly something that we'll be adding to our teaching modules on the DSM, is encouraging clinicians to have a broader, more integrative, holistic assessment approach where clinical disorders like schizophrenia and major depression are part of the picture, but these other factors are just as important.
I've been speaking with Dr. Vicki Vandiver of Portland, Oregon. She's coming to Springfield July 18th to speak with area doctors about some of the challenges that people in her field may be facing as they move forward with the research or clinical scenarios where they'll have to be using a newly released DSM-5 diagnostic manual. Dr. Vandiver, I just wanted to ask, you know, what message do you have for doctors? What questions do you hope to answer? What questions do you hope to pose yourself?
I appreciate that question very much, and I'm going to expand it from doctors to clinicians of all disciplines who have the very important responsibility of using a diagnostic tool to make diagnosis. Remember that using a DSM is hypothesis testing. It's an opportunity to have conversations with people about what they're concerned about, what they would like to see changed, and we have an opportunity to do that through good interviewing skills. And the DSM is but one tool and will never replace the need for good assessment, good diagnosing, and good interviewing skills. It very much is the relational aspect that helps us be able to identify and work with clients. So part of the takeaway message I like to offer is that it's a collaborative approach, and that we have an opportunity to work in a very comprehensive way with patients and families and the communities in which they work. And I think patients can expect that we'll be asking more questions about them and their circumstances. I think that families and caregivers have a chance now to be more participatory in the assessment process. I think clinicians have more tools to use with this DSM. There's assessment measures that have never been included before. I hope the questions that the audience and other providers and clinicians ask is, how can we be better? How can we be more sensitive? And how can we help people achieve a better quality of life? And if we can do that through good assessment and diagnosis followed by intervention, then we've done our job.
It sounds to me like you're saying, really, this DSM-5 has got some important changes in it, but we need to understand that this is just one tool in the toolbox.
Absolutely. I think it's very important for the public and communities and people who've experienced, been on the experiencing end of receiving an assessment and diagnosis, to understand that the field out there is really expanding and becoming more trained and more sensitive to issues, and that this is what we're all working towards together. And the fact that you are talking about this on your radio program is very thrilling to me, because mental health really is about good health, and that's what we want a good citizenship to have, is good health.
Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Vicki Vandiver, co-editor of the peer-reviewed journal Best Practices in Mental Health and author of three books on community mental health, teacher at Portland State University as well as Oregon Health and Science University. Dr. Vandiver, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Peter. My pleasure.